Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
The new book, When Books Went to War, The Stories That Helped Us Win World War II, is the story of an army of librarians, 120 million special paperbacks, and the authors and titles that lifted the spirits of our troops and ultimately created a broad middle-class audience for books. Molly Manning is the author of When Books Went to War. She is an author and an attorney for the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit in New York City, and we welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Very nice to have you here and talking about this very interesting subject. What brought you to it?
Well, when I was researching my first book, I was in the archives of Charles Scribner's Sons, which is a very popular publisher during the 1940s, and I came across a slew of letters from servicemen thanking Charles Scribner's Sons for providing these special miniature paperbacks called Armed Services Editions. And these letters kept talking about just what a big difference these books made in their lives. And so I had never heard of Armed Services Editions and decided to do some digging. And then I discovered this wonderful topic, and I felt that I just had to write this book.
How did those come to be, the Armed Services Edition? Whose idea was that?
Well, I think publishers started to talk about how books played a definite role in the war. I mean, looking back to the book burnings in 1933 in Germany, it was clear that books were under attack. But publishers also wanted to do their part to cheer up the lives of servicemen. And so books naturally were their expertise, and so they decided that they wanted to send over books to the fronts in Europe and the Pacific. But at the time, hardcover books were really the norm, and so publishers had to decide to buck tradition and start printing paperbacks. And they decided that since they were going to start producing these books, they should make them as suitable for combat conditions as possible. So this meant making tiny books that were lightweight and that the men could carry with them anywhere without being overly burdened. And so what we ended up getting were these Armed Services Editions that are probably about the size of a smartphone, and they are so small that they could fit in the pockets of a standard issue military uniform.
One of the things that you write about in the book, that ultimately there were two programs. There's one by librarians and another by publishers. Why two programs?
Well, it started out with librarians and the Victory Book Campaign. So that formed in 1941, and the librarians' efforts were very successful. They collected almost 20 million hardcover books. But it's just that as the war shifted and America's role in it changed from having Americans in training camps where they were able to be served by hardcover books and stationary libraries to Americans serving overseas where foot soldiers had to carry everything on their backs, the needs changed, and so hardcovers were no longer as useful, and that's when publishers stepped in and started producing these miniature paperback books, the Armed Services Editions.
What you find that is so wonderful and such a great part of the story is how quickly the American troops started to embrace and read these books.
Yes, they loved these books. There are stories of men carrying them literally everywhere. Even in places where they had access to movies, the men would bring their books so that they could read before the movie started. Whenever they had a dull moment, they turned to their books. And because of that, they ended up writing letters to publishers and authors just saying how much these books meant to them and how important they were to improving the quality of their lives while they were away at war. And the letters that they wrote are just so incredibly moving and are such strong testaments to the power of books and what good they can really do.
The other thing that really surprised me was what a range of titles that were printed. I mean, there were new books, there were old books, there were classics. There was a little bit of everything.
There really was. The publishers really went way out of their way to try to make sure that they were sending such an eclectic assortment of titles every month, so that no matter what reading taste a person had, there was going to be a book for them each month. Each month, 30 to 40 titles were sent to units around the world, and these titles could range from comic books to Shakespeare. But then there was everything in between, like Westerns and histories and biographies and mysteries. There was lots of fiction. There were sports books. And so basically, if you name it, they printed it. And to make sure that they were actually sending titles that the men really wanted to read, the publishers even took out an ad in the popular newspaper Stars and Stripes. And in the ad, they asked servicemen to write to them and tell them what they wanted, what types of books, specific titles, if there were favorite authors. And as a result, the publishers received thousands of letters from servicemen making requests and saying exactly what they wanted to read. And then the publishers, in turn, did their best to make sure that those titles would end up being published at some point.
The other interesting aspect of the story is there was some call that concern that the publishers were printing these editions for their own profit. But as you point out, this was a real gamble for those publishers.
It was. First of all, profit-wise, initially the publishers only earned a half cent per book. And later on, they did away with that royalty altogether because there was such a need for printing more books than they already were that they did away with the royalty to have more funds to go towards just the printing costs of the books. But also, I mean, the average soldier who entered World War II had, on average, an education on the 11th grade level, and he did not read books unless he was required to do so for schoolwork. And so basically the publishers were faced with a population of Americans who did not gravitate towards books naturally. And so to send books overseas and hope that, you know, they would gain an audience, it was a gamble. And I think because they so carefully selected titles that would appeal to a wide group of men, whether they were avid readers or not, whether they like serious titles or, you know, books of humor, the council made sure that a little bit of everything would be sent so that books would actually be appealing to people who typically would never think of picking up a book.
It is one thing that surprised me, actually, in reading your book of how liberal-minded the publishers and the armed forces were when it came to selecting titles. If there were titles that were coming under some pressure because they were considered obscene and in some places, those titles would eventually make their way to the troops.
That's right. Two titles in particular that came under fire were Strange Fruit and Forever Amber. And these books were banned in cities like Boston and Detroit because they were considered obscene. I mean, by today's standards, they had basically sex scenes that were not all of that graphic. But back then, it was a big deal. But Strange Fruit also told a very important story in terms of race relations in the United States at the time, because that was about an interracial couple who had an affair, and then the woman ended up pregnant. And so they had to deal with living in a country that, in some states, prohibited interracial marriage and, you know, how to navigate that unfriendly landscape. Even Eleanor Roosevelt came forward and said Strange Fruit was an important book for Americans to read. So it's not like it was just pure smut. But publishers, in selecting titles, they had a hired group of readers, and they would read each book, and if there was anything kind of objectionable that they thought might be offensive to people, they would flag those portions of a book. And so as the readers read Strange Fruit and Forever Amber, they started to become concerned that they were sending, and to use their word, trashy books to the armed services. And so this ended up being such a cause of debate that it was taken all the way up to the Executive Board Committee of the Publishers Council. And the Executive Board Committee came out by saying, if the men want trashy books, then we're going to give them trashy books. And so Strange Fruit, Forever Amber, and any other titles that they wanted, they were going to get.
Meanwhile, really, and this just happened at one point in the war around election time, the government was really only worried about politics, less worried about smut, and more worried about political overtones in books.
That's right. For the 1944 election, Congress had to pass legislation that would allow, you know, the millions of Americans overseas to cast a ballot by absentee ballot mechanisms. And so in the course of doing that, one senator from Ohio, Senator Taft, who was a Republican, slipped in a provision that said that any books, magazines, movies, and other reading material that had any kind of political viewpoint would have to be banned because they didn't want the Democrat-led government distributing political propaganda to the troops and swaying the election. And so that provision passed, and then all of a sudden the publishers faced this piece of legislation where they were effectively censoring what books the publishers could print. And the Army and Navy were concerned because anyone who violated the law could be fined or imprisoned. And so obviously they all wanted to avoid jail time or heavy fines. And so the publishers decided to raise awareness of this and how, you know, censorship had no place in America, especially during wartime. And so they took their case to the people, and through a very effective publicity campaign using magazines and newspapers and radio to publicize what was going on, Americans actually came forward and criticized their government and criticized this nonsensical piece of legislation. And over a few months, the law was basically repealed.
Let's talk a little bit about the ending of the program. What happened to the Armed Services Editions after the war?
Well, after the war, they continued, but things had to change, obviously, because with as people were discharged from service, the number of people who would be in need of books drastically declined. There were about 2 million occupation troops, though, that would remain overseas for a few years after the war ended in 1945. And so the Army and Navy and publishers decided that books were still needed. But as the number of books ordered dwindled, the program had to change to still try to make books as economically as possible. And so basically what had happened during the war is a paperback revolution occurred. In 1939, there was only 200,000 paperbacks printed in the United States. By 1947, 95 million were published. And so now there was technology available for the publishers to use to print paperbacks the way that we recognize them today, where they're long side is bound and they stand upright, whereas the earlier editions of the Armed Services Editions kind of looked like postcards where they were longer than they were tall and there was two columns of text on each page. But they continued to produce these books, albeit in this different format, till 1947. And at that point, there were so few troops to serve and the Army and Navy ran out of funding for the program that they decided to just call it quits.
Well, the book tells a fascinating story. It's When Books Went to War, the stories that helped us win World War II. The book is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Molly Manning, thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
The name of the book is When Books Went to War, the stories that helped us win World War II by Molly Manning. It is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.